Welcome to the Devil Rebel Podcast. I'm your host, Talia Herring, and this is the podcast where we rebel against devil one podcast episode at a time. In today's episode, I'm very excited to be interviewing Tamara Sharon Ross, the co-executive director of the Heschel Center for Sustainability. Heschel is a really cool organization. What they do is they're pretty much just a revolutionary, like we're bringing systematic change from the bottom up and the top down. And they really work with locals and different populations to kind of like decarbonize. And, you know, we'll learn more today about how it all works. But
yeah, and you want to tell us a little bit about Heschel and what you do here?
Sure. So the Heschel Center is a nonprofit organization, and it's existed for more than 20 years now.
Wow.
Which is kind of, you know, one of the, I want to say, organizations that came through throughout the 90s, you know, in Israel, working through environment, but our focus was a little different. That's why we're always kind of like in and out of the environmental movement, civil society, social economic. Our focus is creating knowledge and tools, mainly for change makers and leaders, but also recently also for the public. And what we do is basically use tools and ideas and bring them to those people out in the field. So we run transformative programs that are supposed to not just give you knowledge like universities or colleges.
Not theoretical, like hands-on.
Exactly. And also like create like the right motivation for people to take action, because sometimes the knowledge is, it's kind of scary.
For sure. It can be very overbearing. There's a lot to focus on, and you have to actually have a plan of.
Exactly. But yes. And recently we also went into some policy, which is interesting because the Heschel Center hasn't been working directly with the decision makers on a national level, because our ideas were, you know, not very well accepted.
So by decision makers and like before, what was the population you guys were working with?
So we had the Heschel Fellows Program, we still do. 20th cohort just graduated. We receive applications now for cohort 21. It's basically for people who are handpicked and have to apply for it.
So not necessarily politicians, just individuals that are working in sustainability.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, but lately we've been also doing work with municipalities. We train like the directors level at municipalities. Like we worked with like Amadgan, for instance, with Herzliya. We did a really interesting process with Rishon LeZion this year. And the idea is to basically like take all the directors level and give them some sort of like a vision and some tools of what, you know, the vision of sustainability. And then we ask them to make changes in their plans together, which is something that municipalities don't always do. It's revolutionary. It really is. We have the platform for them to collaborate, and we give them inspiration from like other places in the world.
And then they can bounce ideas off of you. Wow, I love that.
So they develop those ideas together and implement them.
So. It's so interesting. Okay, so in Shapiro, they had bike lanes that they made a few years ago, and now they're closing off the bike lanes, they're literally tearing it up, and they're making a park inside the bike lane because they realized that they don't need it. So they literally have like tables and chairs for playing chess, and they're putting in trees. And I'm just like so confused by it, because you just put in bike lanes and I don't understand how this decision-making works, but maybe it is connected to plans.
So it's interesting because Tel Aviv is something, of course, different. we worked with Tel Aviv many years ago on a project called Sustainable Neighborhood.
Okay.
And that was developed together with a Heschel fellow alumnus. And together we created this project. And the idea was to go to residents and actually ask them, what do you want? What do you need? And they shared amazing things. It was actually in also south of the city in Kiryat Shalom. And they, you know, they said the most basic things, like, we don't have numbers on our buildings.
Like not even like sustainability, saving the world from climate change, it's like basic addresses.
But it also is sustainability, because you need to create places that have high quality of life. So
for sure.
So we basically created a direct line for the municipality to talk to residents and understand what they want. And also thinking about a neighborhood as a unit was also able to coordinate all the work of the different municipality departments. So they were able to think through, where are we going to put the park? Where are you going to put the dog park? Where are you going to put the places for elderly to like engage? So it's like all these things were integrated into the planning, and it was amazing. And it's, you know, since then, Tel Aviv has been doing, I want to say, 8 or 9 sustainable neighborhoods, and it's something that's been growing.
So what's happening in the sustainable neighborhoods?
So they basically do the process that I just mentioned. Basically, they ask residents. The residents. They do kind of a shoot of tibul, and they work together with the departments to think about how to coordinate also like the infrastructure things and how to stimulate like local businesses there. So it's from like different directions. Yeah.
So it's also just like helping economically, mm-hmm. like the neighborhood.
Absolutely.
Amazing. What got you interested in sustainability?
So I grew up in the Israeli Scouts movement, and I always knew that I loved the environment. But, you know, the thing that really made me interested and passionate about sustainability is actually learning about it. Mm-hmm. So when I came to the Heschel Center, I knew that I cared about the environment. I didn't know what sustainability was. I didn't understand it. I was curious about it. But I had the best people to learn from, you know, the people that actually invented sustainability in Israel and what it means here. Before it, the word sustainability in Hebrew was even existed. Yeah. They actually like had a little process to basically submit it to the Israeli, the Hebrew language.
Really? Yeah. They brought in the word to the dictionary. Mm-hmm.
They brought
it. Like, both existed because of the Heschel.
Because of the Heschel Center, yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. And now that I know so much about it, I am really passionate about it.
Yeah, it gets addicting.
It gets addicting. And also, like, it's kind of like a lens to look at the world. And you, once you go there, you can't go back.
Yeah. No, it ruins you for good.
It ruins you for good.
Yeah. A lot of people, like, have that conversation with me. They're like, well, what do you do about it now? Once you understand, once you see it, and you can't be blind to the truth, like, what, so you can't go shopping? You can't get to go anymore? Like, you can't look at these things?
Yeah.
It's a good problem to have because education is knowledge, but it's also a lot of responsibility once you know these things. And
it is a lot of responsibility. And I think that it makes you want to take action and fix the world.
Yeah.
And I think it's something that we do put a lot of effort in and thought about when we run our trainings, because it's really easy to get overwhelmed by the amount of things that need to be fixed. And what we do is we give a lot of inspiration. We show how things are done in other places in the world. And there are a lot of examples.
Yeah.
When we say, you can do this too. And we give a connection to the community. We have a community of over 350 alumni for the Heschel Fellows Program and more, even by the thousands of people.
Is it Israeli or also people internationally come for these fellowships?
It's local.
Amazing.
So
that probably has such a big impact. Like, we're going to see that in coming years, right? 350, you're saying, out of the 20 years here, but now each one is going to take in their own projects. And
yeah, huge. So it's interesting because, you know, we're asked frequently about our impact in the world.
We're like, well, wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, that's working in a nonprofit world. You get this question asked a lot. And it's interesting, the last 2 years, we created a project that did a lot of noise, you know, about renewable energy. It's called ENZO, Net Zero Emissions, or ENZO Agada.
Oh, and, I love it.
Yeah, it's a cool name. With that, basically, we did a few things. First of all, we developed a plan for Israel to transform to 100% renewables. In the end, it with our calculations, it came to 95%.
But, okay, still, but, I'm down for them. Yeah. Perfect. Let's start with that.
But, you know, Bennett, you know, said we're going to be at, you know, at zero emissions by 2050. So we're good with, you know, we're good with what he said.
Yeah, let's see the plan for it.
Yeah. So, but in the process, we, you know, the person who developed the model, it's basically a technical, you know, techno-economic model. He was taken, he's an Heschel Fellow alumnus, and he was taken by the Ministry of Energy that saw how awesome this model is and took him to work at the Ministry of Energy. And at the same time, they took another Heschel Fellow alumnus to work there. So basically, we had two Heschel Fellow alumnus in the Ministry of Energy. And I think it changed a lot of perception and understanding of renewable energies. So that's a non-linear change, but sure. It's made a big difference.
Yeah, you can't have an impact report that's like, this is what we did immediately. There is a limit of what you can see right away. And a lot of it is also not even so measurable because it's like the change in people's mindsets, and that's going to affect their families, that's going to affect their community. There's going to be projects, and there's also going to be other things that Heschel apparently is wow, amazing, amazing, so fun to learn about. Okay, so I have a question for you. If there was one thing you could do, you know, flip the switch and change the world and everyone would just do it, what would it be to like help with your vision on sustainability?
Well, I think I'd like to switch people's priorities from, you know, making a lot of money to doing good in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just switching those two priorities and just doing good in the world at the top level and thinking, like, basically examining everything we do through that lenses,
mm-hmm.
I think would make a huge difference. And we will see that everywhere. I think that we're in a place where people are making decisions that are not 100% going to, you know, be at the best interest of everybody.
And I also think that, sorry.
Jeff, sure.
I feel like, okay, we're making a lot of money right now as an investment for the future. Quote unquote, you save up in your bank account for your future generation, for your kids to have. And it's the same vocabulary to talk about sustainability. Literally, it's for future generations. It's an investment. It's so mind-blowing that people are like, we have to buy a home in order for my kids to have where to live. But I'm like, okay, but what about our cars in order for our kids to be able to breathe oxygen that's clean, right? Like, it's the exactly. same mindset of like, instead of making money, like, let's make changes. Like, that's your gift to your kids, right? Their inheritance. I think it should be, like, everyone's top priority, selfishly.
But I think this is why the Hessian Center is unique in its approach, because we say everything's connected. You know, your actions are, you know, directly or indirectly impacting other people, the environment. So what we say is rethink the way we're acting in this world in order to impact the right way, is that the wrong way? And I think people are also not aware of you know, systems thinking.
It's impossible. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. you know, if you think about what work goes into a garment to make a t-shirt that you're wearing, you can't fathom how much work it is. The food on your plate, you can't understand. It's so disconnected nowadays that, of course, people don't think that things are connected because it comes very independent from each other.
Sure.
So you almost have to, like, break down the process of how everything comes into existence. And I always think of it also, like, in a spiritual sense, in a Jewish sense, like, Heschel, right, is, like, a Jewish thinker.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a Jewish idea of our responsibility and what we're building and the mindfulness that is involved in our culture.
No, I mean, we didn't just call the Hessian Center, you know, after, you know.
Yeah,
rabbi, it's a good model. You know, Abraham Joshua Heschel. I think it provides a lot of inspiration to our work about how he wrote about the connection between men, women, nature. I think it makes just a huge sense, because when you think about what we're saying is we're putting people, you know, our society in the front. We're saying sustainability is about our ability to exist in this world, and saying that, you know, the planet is going to keep being here for another 5 billion years without us, humanity. But no, we shouldn't let this happen. We should ensure our, you know, our existence here. And without nature, without, you know, the right ecological life-supporting systems, we're not going to be able to be here.
Exactly. Like, the planet's going to survive, that's fine. But, like, our comfort as human beings, less so. And that's like, the selfish, you know, I think it's very selfish to be sustainable, because it's, you're putting our future first of how are we going to deal with it. Like, this summer was so hot. It was uncomfortable for people to go outside and enjoy their summer because it was so hot, right? So that's like one little, you know, or right now with weather, it impacts your life. It's going to impact the economy. It's going to impact your relationships. And I don't know. I don't want to think about what else, but.
I mean, I think we're seeing, I mean, we've been, humanity has been talking about climate change for over 50 years now. Why haven't we done anything?
Yeah.
And I think we have answers for that. We weren't that uncomfortable to make a change.
So some people are saying we have to get more uncomfortable. We have to wait to see if we're really bad and we'll, like, step up our game.
Well, yes and no. I mean, there are communities in the world that are already feeling very, very uncomfortable.
The Maldives, you know, a lot of island communities are.
Yeah, there are no fish. There are no, I mean, complete, like, whole societies that are built on, you know, fishing. There's no fish. They're hungry. They have nothing to sell. So So I think the modern world is going to, the one that has the most impact basically on climate change hasn't felt that uncomfortable yet. But we talk at the Hashra Center about the exponent, and the exponent means that, you know, once you realize that things are that going to be that bad, it's going to be too late. And this is why we keep warning and saying, no, we have to do it now before we get more uncomfortable, and then it's going to be too late. The world is going to warm up even more than what we want, and then we basically don't know how the world is going to act at, you know, a warming of 2 degrees Celsius.
So how do you flip that switch? How do you get people to wake up and to get on board?
Well, if they're not going to feel uncomfortable enough, we have to create more awareness of the things that we're doing and their impacts. I think talking to a lot of, you know, this is basically why we chose our theory of change. We work directly with decision makers on the national and local level, but we also work with the public, because at national level, politicians and government offices, they're not going to, you know, be willing to make a huge paradigm shift if they won't feel like the public is willing. And I think this is why you have to do both. You have to work on those two lanes and ensure that you have the right conditions to really rethink our way.
Absolutely. I love that. Like, we have to teach people to want it and to actually believe in it. And then we have to show people this is what's happening.
Exactly. I mean, they have to, you know, we have to encourage politicians to rethink the way we're living. We have to want this. They have to know that people are talking about this. We need the media to talk about it. And we see, you know, see the media engaged lately in Israel. You've been reading, you know, mainstream newspapers that, you know, just a few years ago,
never mentioned it.
Yeah. It was really hard to put in just one article about it, you know, and now thankfully it's been covered, but, you know, still not enough, but we're getting there.
People often ask me, like, several rebels that are involved and very passionate and work in totally different fields, right? And they always ask me, like, what am I supposed to quit my job? And, like, what am I supposed to do? How can I help? And whatever position you're in, bring it up more. Talk about it more. Make changes in your workplace. Like, if you work in Tikshomet, if you're in the news media, like, you have so much impact. If you're an educator, you have so much impact. If you work in tech and you can make changes, you know, in the workplace, in your systems of what you're building, like, sustainability goes into everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. And what we do is we try to bring you to people, you know, people who don't go into leadership programs, they can go and, like, are to one of our courses. We have online courses. We have the Key for Sustainability, I'm a staff, which is a course, an online course that is open for registration, like, twice a year.
And who's that for?
People just want to understand the climate crisis and sustainability as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of short, but also, like, very engaging.
Is that online or how does it work?
It's hybrid.
What's it?
And we did feel from people that they want to meet up.
Yeah.
So
we love meeting up.
Yeah, because we like to feel like, well, Israelis, we all love to meet up. So yeah, so we have, so this past course I just ended, we had two physical meetings, and the rest was online, and we allowed for people to come in, and they came in, and it was lovely.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Wait, yeah, can you talk a little bit more about how people can get involved with Hashra, what courses or opportunities are available for?
Sure, so there's the Key for Sustainability. We have the Impact course that's happening now. It's for people that want to make a difference in their workplace. If there's going to be more and more demand, we're going to create more and more courses.
Mm-hmm.
You can also read through our list of things that we publish on our library online. It's mostly in Hebrew, but some of it is translated, so you can look at the source.
Mm-hmm.
We really feel like if you really want to get involved, you should kind of start learning about what's happening in your communities, in your
locally,
in your neighborhood, what's happening, you know, in your planning departments. And I think it's People don't know this, but, you know, every municipality before every planning has to go for, like, for kind of...
Like a memorandum, right?
Like a memorandum, yeah. They need people to, like, basically stamp on, say...
They want for it.
Yeah, so you can go into and do this, and once you learn about them, it's unbelievable, the things that they do. So, yeah, it happens all around us all the time. In my neighborhood right now, they're building a new community center, and they ask residents, like, what do you want in your community center? And it's amazing. So you can ask for all these things, and including like things that have to do with the environment and on the environment and community related, because community is basically one of the essence of sustainability, because we, you know, it heightens or it elevates our quality of life. It allows for sharing. And so allows for a lot of things that we, you know, for basically resilience. And absolutely. So, and this is what we need in order to survive. Right. So you can do that. And also, I don't know if you know this, but because of COVID, they opened a lot of Knesset committees to Zoom participants. And you can log in and find information for a lot of Knesset committees, not just the environment and interior, but also for other planning committees. And it's super interesting, the things that they discuss. And I wasn't really into it before meeting Simovich, our current chairperson, was in there. And once we, you know, because of COVID, it was all like online. We can watch it and participate. And it was just incredible.
It's heated. It's heated in there.
And also it became kind of the cool place to be, I got to tell you. So
I sit around and popcorn.
No, I mean, it's kind of like the place to be, you know, seen and heard.
Yeah.
If you're interested on like the national level, I think it's fascinating.
Amazing.
It's really fascinating.
So you can find out more about the meetings through Heschel, or how can...
Well, no, I mean, you can, I think, first of all, you should find the person, the member of Knesset, or, you know, the representative that you feel mostly connected to, and find those things, you know, get involved politically. The Heschel Center is not an activist organization. It's not Megamayuka. It's not, you know, either, you know, Sendur or whatever. It's an organization that, you know, trains people to be able to think differently and act differently and change the world according to sustainability values. And sustainability is about values at the end of the day. And this is what we need to make sure that our values are being integrated into the actions that we
take. For sure.
So, yeah.
I totally get that. Like, at first I was confused. What's the difference between working with governments on a municipality level or working with policy? But, like, working with a community is about the day-to-day existence of community. And working with policy is the regulations that won't touch just a citizen unless they're going against that regulation, or it impacts their life, or maybe they're not even aware of it, but it'll impact them through a company or where. So it's policy is almost a little bit more distant,
right?
And it's harder to feel day to day.
Yeah, but we get impacted by this every day. Think about COVID. I mean, think about things that happened on the national level.
Yeah,
and impacted our life so much in the last.
It's a great example.
So I think it. You know, COVID is a good example because it's a mini crisis, you know, and climate change is going to be even bigger. So I think it's a good way to kind of like understand how those systems work and figure it out. I think if you're really interested in influencing, mm-hmm. you know, that's one of the places to be. You can also get involved with one of the environmental organizations that do really excellent things. We're really proud to be a part of the environmental movement in Israel. And so
what kind of organizations?
You know, first of all, Green Chorus is doing wonderful things.
Like more policy, if I'm.
Yeah, like less policy, but more like, you know, eco-ocean. So there's a lot of, like, organizations you can get active on, and I think it's great. But, you know, I think if you don't want to do activism, you know, you can also be active on social media. And I think that's also great, you know.
Do you think that has an impact?
Yeah. I think the more you talk about a topic, you spread the word, that's when it comes, like, we talk about things being from the nonsense to common sense. So if, you know, think about a lot of things that we did, amazing things that we did as humanity, like, you know, stop slavery or give women the right to vote. And yeah. Things were, like, turned around, things that people didn't really... think that
we have examples in history of when we were going to make a radical shift and it actually worked, and we have proof that we can do it, so let's do it now.
Exactly. The more people talk about it, the more people get engaged. This is how we, you know, we make a movement. So
amazing. It's so fun to be part of.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of anxiety when it comes to, like, eco-anxiety of like, what's going to happen with the future. But I feel like once you're part of a movement and you feel connected and you see, you know, even this conversation, it's giving me so much hope. It's giving me so much excitement about what's happening in Israel. Because so many times it's easy to be like, oh, nothing's changing. Like, okay, Heschel's been around 20 years. Like, what's been happening? Like, people have been dealing with, you know, the plastic island has been found 60 years ago. What have been doing? Like, so many things have been known about, and we actually are making a lot of changes. It happens slow.
We are on a positive exponent. I mean, Greta Thunberg, like, has created a positive exponent in terms of climate change awareness. And she engaged a lot of people in the world. And decision makers are listening.
Yeah.
And this government in Israel is listening.
I was reading a study about how daughters, especially children, are great at motivating their parents to get involved in climate action and in sustainability. But daughters especially, there's like a moral voice that is very persuasive. And I see that with Greta. Like, she's the daughter of the world, and she's coming here to beg people to pay attention. And it's so powerful. It's so intensely wonderful listening to these women that are young leaders that are changing everything.
Yeah, I think young people have a lot of power in this because it's their future.
It's their future, but it's also, you know, people that have made their money by gaining from the coal industry, from fossil fuels, from, you know, the overconsumption of our society. Like, just because they gained the money and now they're retired doesn't mean that they're off duty. Like, they can still get involved. They still have years on their life to make an impact. And I don't think it's fair to be like, it's only on the young people, or they'll figure it out.
Oh, but 100%. You know? No, but I'm saying in terms of like moving the movement forward.
Mm-hmm. I think
I'm really inspired by those young activists. They're doing amazing work. And my co-director, when he went to Glasgow with some of them, and, you know, they had...
How was that?
They were very fun. How was that? Well, you need to ask her, but...
another podcast episode.
Well, it was, on the one hand, very inspiring to see so many people. I think like 25,000 people there. It's unbelievable. At the same time, it was kind of like...
people flying on private planes to get there. Like,
there's a misunderstanding of what this should be, I think.
What should be?
You know, if you come to a place and they serve, you know, they still does a line to eat your burgers at COP26, and you're kind of like, well, I think we're not really...
They were serving meat there?
Yeah, a lot of meat.
That's fascinating to
me. Yeah. It did say on the menu, like, what is the carbon impact of this?
I love that. Like,
but it didn't prevent people from eating it, you know?
It's really upsetting to hear.
I mean, everybody that's been there kind of like was traumatized, I think, by that. And also the merch, lots of merchandise.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. Everyone had their tote bags. I'm just like, wow. Yeah. It's the overconsumption in sustainability and the showing. And it's not, I'm not saying all of COP26 is greenwashing, but like the amount of people that showed up from within the coal industry, you know, that people that are part of the problem being like, we're gonna fix it, don't worry. Like, okay, fix it.
Yeah. I think, listen, Greta stayed outside.
Yeah.
And
they're all protesting.
She was protesting. I don't know if you heard her speech. If you didn't.
I'm a good fangirl.
No, but if any of the listeners
didn't,
it's kind of your must, because it really kind of shares the frustration.
Yeah.
But it also gives you motivation to like keep going. And yeah, I think in Israel we're kind of experiencing the post Glasgow now.
You were. How so?
You know, because decision makers are like kind of like, yes, and then continue doing whatever they're doing.
We're not gonna let go.
That's the thing. We're just not gonna let go.
Yeah.
And the good thing is that we have really, really good partnership with the Ministry for Environmental Protection, or really good friends, and they're supporting our work, and we're supporting each other, and with their backing, we can do a lot.
It really makes me so happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we feel like they, it's not fair that they're supposed to, you know, hold the torch, you know. It's not fair. It should be, you know, the entire government's best interest to really work together on.
For sure. I think, you know, we have this pride of being the Startup Nation and that we have built our economy. But, like, wouldn't it be cool if we had this pride of, like, we're going to be the Green Nation? Like, we're going to make this happen. We're a small country. We're in this piece of land.
Yep.
That, you know, let's make that happen. And then we'll have our ego to the rest of the world. But I think that'd be really fun.
No, I mean, this is basically what Bennett, you know, you know, in Glasgow, he came to say Israeli innovation is going to save the planet. And in here, you know, we're here to serve you. And honestly, I'm a little worried about that. That's what Bennett came with when he, you know, came to Glasgow, is talk about innovation, how Israeli innovation is going to save the world. And I think it's a little worrisome because, you know, if we think that technology is going to save us, it's not going to be enough.
Yeah, it's one piece.
It could be a good piece if we think through it really well. But right now, climate tech is still kind of something that is not very widespread, and people don't really understand what climate tech is. We need to think about what innovation we really need, and technology is important. I'm just saying that we have to think through what and create guidelines to what is the right climate tech, where we want to take this forward, where we need the right technology. And there's a big question mark on that. And, you know, there's so...
I think it's wonderful, you know, Israel has like 50 startups that are working on meat alternatives. And I think it's wonderful because we need to lower the price in order for it to be accessible. So the more competition, the better. I totally am aboard. But that's one thing that's not going to solve everything. And it has to be in a way that also is reflective of different cultures, of different types of food, of allowing communities to get involved. Like, we can't just buy processed food in plastic, even though it's vegan, and pretend that's okay, right? Like, it has to be part of, like, what are we doing? Let's think of the why. Let's have big picture. And then we can go into these different companies and figure out solutions. But if everyone's just going to build solar and we're just going to throw out solar panels another 10 years because they don't have a long life, like, that's going to be a problem. Like, let's figure out and actually build a revolution that's going to be sustainable as in long term as well.
Right. Exactly. This is why we talk about upstream solutions.
And what does that mean?
Well, it means that if you think of a problem, think about like transportation, for instance, traffic.
Okay.
Right? You stand in traffic. What kind of question do you want to ask? You know, like, why are people in traffic, right? Well, like, you know, what's the problem? We want to get people, you know, from point A to point B. So mm-hmm. What are we going to do? We're going to build more roads, right?
Yeah, more asphalt.
Okay. You can ask a better question. You can ask, maybe we need, like, better public transportation, right?
Possibly.
You know. But then you can also ask, like, why do even people need to go from point A to point B?
Okay.
And then the answer is going to be completely different, right? The answer is going to be like, maybe we create a way for people not to go that frequently from point A to point B. Maybe they have all they need in point A and they don't need to go to point B that often. Mm-hmm. So we kind of need to think through the problem in a kind of like a 360 degrees kind of way.
Yeah, not just going straight for the solution of like, okay, a different type of transportation, but like, exactly. Let's
create another problem, right?
Yeah.
Because if we create more roads, more people are going to go on that road.
Yeah, more right? Cars, more cars. Traffic.
Exactly.
Population.
And we see that, you know.
For sure. Okay, so that's really interesting because in my head, I always go straight to like the cultural impact. Not necessarily the why, but I'm like, in Israel, when you're driving, you always see one person in each car. You never see carpooling here. It's very much a status symbol in Israel that you drive the new car to your work versus in New York City, you'll see very wealthy people on subways sometimes, or in Europe, you'll see people taking public transportation, and that is not thought of as dirty or lower class. But it's like part of the cultural understanding that we're like, we need single family cars. Everyone has to live outside of Tel Aviv and drive into Tel Aviv at the same hours. And it's crazy to me, because why would you want to waste half your day in a car beeping at each other in this competition to like get to a place in order to sit more? Like, it's so frustrating.
As always, I think it's more than culture. It's also basically a question of infrastructure. Because at the end of the day, you can create really good public transportation inside the city, but to go outside the city, it's called the 10-minute gap or something, the 500-meter gap or something, which basically says that from your house to your train station, you still have no good way to go.
For sure. And if you're able to shove your stuff there.
Exactly. Think about, it's really ridiculous, but think about like where I live in like north of Tel Aviv. To go to like university station, you know, train station, I still have to budget something like 40 minutes because I don't have a bus that can take me directly from my neighborhood that's really close, right, to the train station. I don't have a direct bus that takes me there.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge issue, and happens not just inside Tel Aviv, it happens outside as well, where you have that gap. So people, in order to like, you know...
But what would a direct bus mean, right? Because it has to make stops to pick people up along the way.
Okay, so you can basically take examples from abroad, right? You've been in New York City.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like everything is coordinated, right? It's like if you want to switch to the train, they wait for each other so people can switch easily from the F train to the A train, right? And it's just a well-oiled machine. In Israel, it's not that way. It's disorganized. So people suffer from that. And they say, well, you know, I don't want to do this. I'm just going to go into my car and drive. And so that's one part of it. The other part is some sort of status symbol, cultural, whatever. And workplaces are encouraging it because they're giving cars to their employees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if you know, when I was offered a job at the Jewish agency at the time, they also offered me a car.
Yeah.
And it's...
They need it.
Yeah, because you just need it. And, you want to go to Jerusalem every day, so you need a car.
Yeah.
And so I think the whole mindset has to change about transportation and how we think. But it really demands a vision for transportation in this country.
So would one of the options be just... kind of like now with the age of Corona, of working remotely, would that just be it? Or is it having more offices in every neighborhood and not just having one midtown?
I mean, it's part of it. I mean, there could be different solutions for different places. I think there's no one stop. It's just a matter of rethinking the way that we think about transportation right now. And it doesn't mean that we need to do exactly what's in New York and what's in San Diego and what's in, you know, New Orleans, whatever. It means that we need to think through whatever our society needs and what are the challenges and trying to find a better way of doing it.
For sure.
And I think what we do is basically a patch and a patch and a patch. And a
yeah.
So
instead of going deep, we're just building above.
Exactly. Because it always feels like Israel is kind of like an urgent,
survival.
Two things, and it's survival. And we have like, the population exploding here. So we have to build more and more and more. And it's just you don't stop and say,
you don't ask.
How do we plan for the next, 30, 50 years?
Wow.
These questions are not being asked.
Yeah. We gotta really think about it that way. And it's really important to think about and to like pause before you act. Cause I'm so impatient also. I'm just like, let's do it. Let's make this happen right now. I'm just like, wait, let's check in first. What actually makes sense?
Yeah, but I think it means a lot for the national level to plan, and not just like for every ministry, but for all the ministries together. Kind of like what we do with municipalities, when I told you in the beginning, we worked with the infrastructure department and the water department and the social services department. So you all have to work together to create a joint vision.
For sure.
And act accordingly.
And then it benefits everyone.
Exactly.
It's great. I love it that there actually are solutions that are beneficial for everyone, that like could be good for the economy, good for, you know, people at our different socioeconomic levels, good for, you know, the planet. Exists. It totally does. It's just like implementing it.
Yeah, I think there are solutions there. But we have to, again, switch our way of thinking from like you know, accumulating money to doing good. And once we do that, because there's basically...
But how do you do that? How
well, people are well off. They're just well off, right? I mean, but the system makes you kind of want to maintain
everyone,
that.
Not
right?
Everyone is well off.
Exactly. So people who are not well off are going to keep suffering from, you know, from this inequality.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to somehow put the limit on it and saying, well, our standards are going to be different now, you know, because we as a society, we encourage it, right? We encourage people to go into, you know, money-making positions, and people who are well off, we admire them. You know, people who are rich, we read about them in a newspaper. We read about them. The media covers them.
Yeah.
We are occupied with it. You know what I mean? But we need to be occupied with, you know, with people who do good. You know what I mean? Like, we need to rethink this. So I, you know, we don't have all the answers. And, you know, a lot of my colleagues, we have ideas about it, but we don't necessarily feel the same way. And there's many opinions, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And but I'm sure we can do this because we don't have another way.
Yeah. Wow. So much to think about. I'm like, wow, I just feel like sit in this for a bit. Okay. So one last question, recommendations for like a good podcast, book, article, anything. Where do we learn more about sustainability?
Well, so I mentioned our library. You can browse through there.
Okay.
There's a video, movies, this film series that we created called The End of the World, or How to Thrive in the 21st Century. And those are like short videos, and they're fun and they're funny. And some of them are terrifying, but you just
so good. It's so good.
Yeah.
It's in Hebrew. I've seen them. Amazing. They're in Hebrew, but with great subtitles. And the humor is spot on. So well done. It's very sassy. I love it.
Yeah. Actually, my older son is in one of those videos.
Ooh.
Yeah.
A little cameo.
Cameo for Dan Ross. If you're interested in more, you know, environmental perspective, there's Paul Hawken has been, you know, writing about, you know, the book, the classic book, Less and Rest,
mm-hmm.
Regeneration and Project Drawdown, which he did. So those are really good. I recommend them. If you're going to get a little bit more inspiration, I would read Donella Meadows.
Okay.
So she writes about how to envision a better future, and it really just fills you with a lot of inspiration. I listen to podcasts. I listen to Malkilim in Hebrew, and there's Intelligence Squad. That's in English. That's also interesting. It's a British podcast. And obviously there's more, and there's a new Haaretz podcast called Hatzilu. It's about climate change. It's really good. It's really, really good.
Check that out.
Very well done. Yeah.
Amazing. Wow, what a good list.
Yeah. Sure. Any of those will work. And read more.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Okay, any last words before we sign off?
No, just thank you for having me. It's really fun to talk about sustainability.
It really is so fun. Thank you for joining me on this podcast. So thank you so much.
So that's a wrap for the second episode of the Zevil Rebel podcast. Thank you so much to Tamara Sharon Ross and the Heschel Center for Sustainability. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave a review and share with others. Next episode, I will be speaking with Lee Schooler about impact investing, how our finances can affect climate change, and why it's okay to make money while doing good. Until then, stay rebellious. Bye, Rebels.